Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Shannon, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
One left. Caught by Jawan Johnson. Makes a move. Down the left sideline. Oregon's going to win the Rose Bowl. They throw for it on third down and three, and a little wide receiver hitch to Jawan Johnson gets it. And it can be victory formation now for Oregon. That is the play that will seal it.
Herbert. Snap. Back to throw. Swings it out. Caught. First down and more. 25-20. Inside of the 10 and out of bounds goes Jawan Johnson. Ball game. Oregon is going to win this one.
I guess you had three options on the radio call. Jerry Allen, Matt LaPay, or Bob Wischusen. We went with our own Jerry Allen. Excuse me. And Bob Wischusen of ESPN Radio. When he went back to pass, I was like, dude, if he's not open, just take a knee. And then by the time you realize he zipped it in there to six, and that was ball game. Oregon wins the Rose Bowl, 28-27. Willie Taggart takes a team with four wins, gets him seven. Mario Cristobal ups that to nine.
Are you okay?
I just had a little water go down. The water go down the wrong pipe.
Clearly.
And it was water.
Clearly.
And goes from 9 to 12. You know what if you go unbeaten and win a national championship, you know what you win, right? 15. So I'm just saying. Then he goes to the NFL, goes 18-0, and wins the Super Bowl. You know, I was just watching this, I think it's the Gator Bowl, and I see a sea of orange because Tennessee's in it. And I was thinking about what we were talking about at the top of the program as we welcome you to Sports Talk, the, wow, Thursday edition. It's all very confusing. But,
What a weird start to the fourth quarter. Do we need to start over again?
Now, good.
Just play the intro.
Are you talking about the choking to death, not knowing what day it is, and can't find my derailed train of thought?
Yeah, I think we should
time out. Everybody gets three. There's my first one.
Yeah, first of the year. Hey, we're using it early. Sometimes you need to do that.
Yeah,
it
you
just
do.
Sometimes
opening drive, you're in the red zone. You got to make sure you come away with points. So, for example, what bowl games have you traveled to? Only the majors, right?
Yes, I've only gone to the Rose Bowl. That's the only road. Well, I went to it wasn't a bowl game, but I went to the Auburn game this year, and then
right.
I went to a Colorado game. That was because my sister was at CU
right.
Boulder. So Rose Bowl.
But if it wasn't for a blood relative getting married, you would have either gone to Ducks Auburn, which is one of the biggest non-conference games of the year,
right.
and one of the biggest non-conference games literally Oregon has played in recent memory,
right.
and majors. Because I was looking, and like, look how much orange is there. There's tens of thousands of people at the Gator Bowl. Now, the proximity between Knoxville and, as you might imagine, the Gator Bowl is in Florida. No! That you could do by car. Like, what would it take? Like, for example, what circumstances would there have to be? Like, somebody pick up your plane ticket. Like, if Oregon went back to, like, the Red Box Bowl next year. I mean, for you, I guess that's kind of a trip home.
I could go home. I've never been inside the press box at Levi Stadium. I think, well, the new Vegas Bowl is going to be a big one because they're changing, they're reshuffling
the match.
Oh, yeah, Oregon goes to a Vegas Bowl. Now it's going to be a big thing that they're going to the Vegas Bowl, and yeah, let's go to a Vegas Bowl. I think I would do the Alamo Bowl because I think that would be a cool part of Texas to go to. I really enjoy San Diego, so I would do the San Diego County Community Credit Union Poinsettia Holiday Bowl. I'd go to that one. Yeah, I don't know. If the matchup was right, and maybe, you know, I could get a couple of my friends and we could go and make a trip out of it or something. Maybe
I think
work covers ticket. I get a press pass, whatever. Yeah, I'd go
Vegas or Holiday Bowl of the non-majors. The only ones I would consider Vegas because it's Vegas. Holiday Bowl. I would like take time off and be like, dude, we're playing Torrey Pines. I'm playing 3 days of golf. It'd be like I'm taking my vacation time. Well, you know, somebody just mentioned, now you're also talking, even though it's not a major bowl, I mean, how often do you get a chance to go to the horseshoe to see Ohio State? Yeah. That's big stuff. I know a lot of folks in 07 went back to the big house. You know, we've had trips in recent years, too, speaking of Tennessee, Rocky Top. You know, a legendary venue. You know, Brian Denny, where Bama played, if they ever got a home and home with them. I know, back to 2000, the home and home with Wisconsin, going to Camp Randall in Madison. They played in the late 2000s, 08 or 09, at West Lafayette against Purdue, you know, Big Ten tradition. anybody out there in, was it 03 or 04? Go to Starkville and see Mississippi State with all the cowbells. I mean, if you're a college, first of all, good on you if you got the financial wherewithal and the time to go back in, I guess, early September, most of those games are. But I got to confess, I'm a little too much of a brat. I'd really want to make a vacation out of it, although bucket list-wise, Brian Denny, I don't know, Jordan Hare. I guess my ultimate would be night game, Death Valley, LSU, where they say you could smell the bourbon wafting from the stands.
That just sounds like fun.
And I'm all in favor of any stadium that marks its 5-yard lines, which is always something that's when you know you're watching the Bayou Bengals, because it makes it easy to count. It's like Schoolhouse Rock, the sign that stadium, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, stop!
Another thing about LSU that I love is their the uniform combo with the yellow helmets, white jersey, I think it's yellow pants as well. Anytime LSU,
it pops.
Yeah, anytime LSU isn't wearing their white jerseys, it should be a crime. You talk about like the, oh, what sports thing would you do if you were commissioner of a league or whatever? If I became, you know, commissioner of the NCAA, the first thing I would do would make it illegal for LSU to wear anything other than yellow, white, yellow. That's it. That would be the first thing I would do. Everybody has to wear their home jersey against LSU. They get to wear their white. It doesn't matter how good, how bad they are. Home team, road team, they are wearing white jerseys. You can't do anything about it. It should be illegal for them to wear.
Illegal.
Illegal. Any other color jersey, especially not purple helmets. Get those the hell out of here. Illegal, I tell you.
Purple helmets, huh?
They've done that before. It looks gross. They did it earlier this year. I think they went all purple, purple, yellow, purple, purple, white, something like that. They looked gross. I think they're playing Vanderbilt, so that's probably why they did it. They're like, look, if we have to, one time this year, let's do it against Vandy, get it out of the way.
It's Vandy.
What's the worst that could happen? It looked horrible.
All right. Few of you have chimed in that you made it to Starkville. And I'm like, really? I got to tell you, and I've heard Georgia in between the hedges is pretty cool. Chances of me traveling to the state of Mississippi, unless I'm a hostage, probably not going to happen. I just said there's a zero desire ratio. And now you're saying, well, how about Alabama? Huh? Namath played there. I don't, I'll make it accommodation. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Basketball now kind of morphs in, and it's kind of easy to do the two-step and be like, all right, football's over. That was great. Got the number 2-4 team in the country. Kind of a natural tendency to want to pump up the volume. But as far as yesterday's game.
Oh, who did Eugene end up rooting for? Did he stay true to his name and root for the Ducks?
He was wearing his LaMike jersey and holding his Bucky stuffed animal. My daughter-in-law, born in Wisconsin, a grad of UW Green Bay, had her duck gear on, got her master's at the U of O, and she also works for the U of O. My son ducks through and through.
Right, okay.
And everybody, all of their friends who they had over were also rooting on the Ducks.
Good so, for them. They chose correctly.
You chose wisely. But that was a hell of a game. And obviously, if you look for something to be desired, well, the kick cover team kind of comes to mind. Man, for those who didn't realize the statistical anomaly, Ducks get the ball. Well, first they win the toss, and it seems like most of the time in a big game, a good team that trusts their defense defers. They didn't. They took the ball. And, of course, when you march like that and go on top, you think, oh, 75 yards, touchdown, Herbert number one on the keeper with the stiff arm. Good decision. The weird thing is they ended up with, what, 110 yards for the half. They got 35 yards the rest of the way. The running game left a hell of a lot to be desired, unless it was Justin on a keeper. And, you know, there were adjustments made, and just the ability of Avalos and that defense to knuckle down as the shadow of their own goalpost started to reveal itself. I mean, I don't know if you could ask for a bigger rise up, if that's the proper phrase, than that last Wisconsin drive where Oregon held them to a field goal. I mean, it was about to become a situation where, are they really going to fall behind by 10 points, have to all of a sudden go hurry up, go on sides, try to make a stop? I mean, there was a lot of badness looming in the air. And, you know, another Rose Bowl defeat, you know, when Ohio State beat them in January of 2010. But what Rob Mosley tweeted out about a half hour before we went on the air in the 2 o'clock hour, I thought was just spot on critical, because Oregon, in defending the red zone and not allowing touchdowns. Remember, one of the reasons Oregon turned so many 2.5-3 touchdown leads under the Chip Kelly era into 87-point leads is they would just march down and score touchdowns. It's one of the, you know, I know Chip deep down inside had this kind of disdain for just basically for field goals, but man, they finished the deal really well. So
if Chip Kelly never got like a huge break at a college university, he would absolutely be that high school head coach that never used special teams. It's onside. That's the only reason he has a kicker. The guy's not even a kicker who does the onside kicks. It's just, you know, a guy who just so happens to be good at doing an onside kick. Go for it on fourth. Go for two every single time. No punts, no field goals. That's Chip Kelly. Now, what a way to live life.
You know, when you go back to that point in the middle of the third quarter, when Wisconsin drove 65 yards on 11 plays, and you know they scored on fourth down, and if you were paying attention, on social media, the theme was, if Oregon's offense goes three and out, they might be dead. And what happened? They went three and out. And Mimone, who had a fantastic senior year, had a horrible punt. He put Wisconsin in business at their own 40. And the next thing you knew, they were down to the Oregon 25, first and 10. And it was 30-yard line. That pushed them into the fourth quarter. I'm sorry. I got my notes mixed up here. But they started the fourth quarter on third and three. They got stuffed, but then they gave it, I think it was to the up back, who got the first down, pushed them into the red zone, and Jonathan Taylor made that five-yard rush. Then they stuffed it, and then on third and four, they got good heat on Cone, and I think the receiver might have fallen. But remember, that was at the nine-yard line. A touchdown there, and it's 31-21, and there's 12 minutes to go. And, obviously, the outcome could have been a lot different, but that led to, even though Oregon didn't score down six, they gave the defense a chance to go. They got the first down. Then they had the play to Pittman on second and one. Verdell got the first down. So even though they had to punt, they killed about 3 minutes of game time and, overall time. And they buried Wisconsin deep. And that's when Danny Davis fumbled the ball and Bryson Young recovered it. And Herbert ran in for what would turn out to be the gamer. But it was that defense holding them out of the end zone, which kind of left the door open temporarily, which turned out to be permanent when Oregon got the ball back with, the defense just kept getting the ball back when Herbert hit JJ 6 and it was knee time and let the confetti fall. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Sean. Sean, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. How's it going?
Going great, Steve. How are you guys doing?
All right, what's up?
Hey, yeah, calling from Colorado. I was going to go to the game tonight, but fortunately not going to make it. Actually, the last time I went was Oregon's Final Four year when they had played a really poor game in Boulder, but I was calling, has Oregon ever won in Boulder? I thought I heard recently that we hadn't won a game in Boulder.
No.
Anyway, thanks for taking the call.
All right, appreciate it. No, they're 0-for. They said they were 0-for in conference play. I don't know if they've ever won there. I mean, how often would they have gone to Boulder to play a non-conference game? I don't really know. Dating back from when they were maybe a Big 8 team, a Big 12 team. I guess we could try and figure that out. I'm pretty sure in the game notes, Greg would have put them in, the history of the series. But when we were talking during the pre-game football yesterday with Joey Mack, I was like, let's face it, as far as Dana Altman's era goes, they've checked every box but three. They haven't won a Final Four game. They haven't won a national championship. And they haven't won at Boulder since the Buffs. Yep. So, 0-for. All right. And Joey brought up one of the best points. And, obviously being the voice of the Ducks and, being a great radio guy and an outstanding analyst and a guy who knows his stuff. He pointed out, it's very interesting, every time they've played there, it was the back end. They played Utah first in Salt Lake City. So now, you get to altitude, you wonder if that matters, but now they're playing at the Coors Center first.
And that's another thing that Doug Gottlieb used to say all the time when he was the lead-in show into us, is he would always say the second game at altitude is so much worse than the first one because you're just that much extra gas. Like, right. You think you can prepare for it.
Never thought of that.
You're never ready.
Interesting. And, there's science behind it. All right, back to the phones. Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in George. George, good evening. How's it going?
Things are well, Steve. Thank you. I wonder how many people, if they didn't watch the game, the Rose Bowl, or knew nothing about the final outcome, how many people would have looked at the team statistics, including time of possession, and tried to guess a score? And I have to believe that 28-27 would not have been anyone's guess. They were outstatted pretty much up and down the line.
Yeah, well, you know, when you look at it, first of all, neither team really put on. I mean, if you're a Wisconsin fan and you only looked at your stats and saw 322 total yards and just 5.5 yards per attempt and an interception and a bunch of turnovers and 9 penalties versus 2, probably wouldn't have thought you did that well either. But if Oregon is only looking at their side of the sheet with 100 rushing yards, 138 passing, and, you know, 6 punts and 66 total yards rushing, I guess it was. Neither team should have been boasting about, especially their offensive side of the stat sheet.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks a lot. When you look at punting, even with his one short punt, Mimoan averaged 45 yards a punt, 41.5 net. I mean, even if you're at your own 10, you're at least pushing them to their side of the field and make them need a couple of first downs. But, fumble returns, interception returns. Oregon only returned the one kick. And Mikhail Wright, it was a nice one, got him out across the 30. But, because of the 95-yarder, Badgers averaged 49 yards a punt return. And like George said, 38-22 time of possession. And especially, the third quarter where, what did Oregon run a set? They had the ball for a total of 2 minutes. And, Oregon was not good on third down. Badgers got off the field when needed. The one time they went for on fourth, if there was one kind of thing that sticks in Oregon fans' craw all season long, it's that third and one, fourth and one, kind of, it seemed like everybody knew what was coming. They ran it anyway. I don't know if it's just a mano-a-mano mentality, but I've said this before, because there's always been this logic of, well, if you can't make a yard, you don't deserve to. And it's like, the object is to make the yard, not prove you're tougher. Doesn't matter how you do it. If you have to run, if they're packed in there and you have to run a double reverse flea flicker, kick it off a guy, and recover a yard and a half downfield, and you make the first down, that's successful. You're not there to prove anything except you can make the stinking first down.
Is that an illegal kick?
I guess that would be more of a kick off. But this hole where you got to line up, you got to no. Just get the first down. That's all you got to do. Make a yard. However it happens, if it's a pass, if it's some kind of deceptive play, and if you're leaving certain would-be tacklers unblocked, be it backside or right in front of you, then you got to find another path towards success. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll be back with a Coors Light update and more sports talk. 95.3, The Score.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top 5 RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guarantee.com.
Holla will go deep, and here is Anthony Lottie, an average of 40 yards per punt to punt it away. And he dropped it. Ball on the ground, Oregon. Brady Breeze has got it. Brady Breeze is going to score again. That's the second time this year that Brady Breeze.
And did you see him one-hand scoop that?
As a rule, as we welcome you back to Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score, when the Ducks are home, I'm at Autzen and sitting on press row right next to Nick. And we watch the game. We've got the monitors. We've got our laptops. We're taking notes, prepping for the post game and for, you know, the next week's shows. And every game, for probably the last 3 years, what I call away games. To me, Auburn, I know, neutral site. If I'm not on press row, it's an away game. Do our pregame, ends 2 hours before. My tradition is I get back home, take the dogs for a walk, get a workout in, shower up, have a bite to eat, get ready to watch the game. And most of the time, because I've got Xfinity, I wait until, you know, especially if there's a big play, usually a turnover or a touchdown. What happens? They go to break and I go, zzz. So you heard Jorgie right there on the call say, did you see him scoop that? And I'll tell you the truth. I don't know if it's because I was watching the punter or I just took my eyes off where the action was. I did not see how Brady Breeze at live action. And I, as they were kind of setting up for the extra point, I was like, wait a minute. What the hell just happened?
Just a claw. Just, it's like he's got a mechanical claw.
And by the way, look at it. No. That's the one thing. Because he grabbed at it twice.
Did he?
Yeah, he did not pick it clean the first time. And I'm thinking, if they had the right protection and you went to grab that one-handed and then lost it, I don't think everybody's, I'm serious, watch the play again. He goes one, then he gets it on the second one, and I'm thinking, dude, dive on the ball. It ended up perfect and brilliant and an historic play. He had the scoop and score against Nevada. He had the pick six against USC. So he had a defensive scoop and score, a special team scoop and score, and a defensive pick six for the touchdown.
I thought in live time that because he picked it up so cleanly, it was the way he picked it up and started running immediately, I thought it was because he had a knee that was like halfway down. And I was like,
that's one of the other reasons I looked.
Right. I just thought there's no way he could have picked that ball up with it moving and bouncing around, picked it up that clean and started running the other way that fast without having a knee down. Immediately, just, I don't know if it's my ultimate pessimistic mind where I was just like, oh, great, points are coming off the board. There's no way this could have actually happened to Oregon. There's no way. It's impossible. Couldn't have happened. But it did. It was incredible.
No, it wound up being spectacular. But like I said, if you watch the highlight, it's not...
It's kind of, it's a grab and a half. The ball hits the ground.
But like I'm saying,
he reaches down and he...
When you grab and a half, that means if the half doesn't work, that ball, especially it's a football, if you don't end up with the clean possession, and well, actually, I take it back. It doesn't matter if Wisconsin recovers it.
Right, it would have been fourth down.
It's still a duck ball anyway. But
he's
the second one was clean as a whistle.
Oh, well,
the second effort, and he's gone. Nobody's catching him in a million years.
I don't know if it's technically a second grab because he keeps his hand on it the whole time. He reaches down as he's kind of still coming in from the rush, and the ball's kind of behind him. So he reaches down, and he gets like three fingers, and he gets his thumb and his index finger on the ball for sure. And then he kind of has to like slight readjust, and then he puts his other hands down. But he just, it's like a claw. The way he picks the ball up, it's just like, this is in my hand. I have a claw for a hand now. Foomp, the ball is stuck to it. I'm just going to go run. There's no one that was taking that ball away from him.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you insist on joining the festivities, you could also text us 321-0824. On Twitter, it's at 953 the score for the station. For me, it's at SportsTalk953. For Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline they go, which they is us and I guess Gary. Gary, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Think in terms of picking up the ball, not with a claw, but with a Lego hand.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Nice.
It was just that kind of like click, locked on, down the field we go.
Great, all right, I'm with you there.
Great game. I can't see how anybody who loves college football wouldn't have been more than glad to pay for the show that they got.
Well, the bottom line is, as far as the 24 New Year's Day bowls since the implementation of the college football playoff, that was the second most watched game behind Ohio State Washington last year, I guess. Yeah.
I think the Ducks made the most of it, but there's a couple of things I was curious about. In listening to, I believe it's Mr. Woody, who is your post-game analyst.
Yes.
Did I discern a tone in his voice, but did he seem less than enthusiastic about some of the play calling that involved running a back into the line between the tackles against an 8 or 9 man front?
Yeah, I think that he was echoing the sentiments for many, but it was countered because all year long he's been screaming for them to utilize Herbert more as a runner, and I would say that aspect of the game calling worked out pretty well.
Believe me, I would just as soon had the offensive line do a good job of holding out the defense and let Mr. Herbert throw the ball 50 yards down the field and we score.
Well,
he'd be a lot less chance of him being damaged as opposed to...
Yeah, there were a lot of moments of frustration for the offense, but they only gained like 200 yards. So, you know, and... Herbert on that third and two, not realizing he's got to be cognizant of his blind side and taking a sack. I mean, that was pretty brutal as well.
He deserved all the accolades he got. I did want to ask also about one other thing, and if you could explain to me, what was the positive or affirmative result of Oregon wearing gray uniforms?
I do not offer information on uniforms. It has no impact on anything.
Well, I suppose that it's just a matter of personal preference, but I thought as great as the Kelly Green looks, you know, on TV, that would have really just popped off that screen.
You know what pops off the screen? 28-27 Rose Bowl champions.
Yes. Something just...
Gary, you know me for a long time. I don't do outfits. I don't care.
I'm just pulling your chain on that.
All right.
Have a good one, buddy.
Take it easy. I know some people were showing the reflection of the sunset off the helmet.
Did you really not notice that? It was beautiful. Oh, my goodness. You're almost too locked into things. I think you need to start having a little bit more fun.
I tell you what. For every one of you who say that, host a post-game show. And then you could enjoy the, oh, isn't that nice? Isn't that sweet? And then I got nothing to talk about with Kenny except the pretty uniforms.
That would be like, I think I had you, I wanted to ask, have you asked George Schroeder a question? It was just like, so, Clemson, huh? And just like, that would be my post game. Wow, Oregon won. Ain't that a thing? How about that, Kenny?
So dying to try that one time. Just one, you know, normally I'll set it up and, you know, offer... First of all, when you have a guest, you just don't want to hit him with a one-liner because that's not the way people who do interviews on TV or radio are trained. So, because that's the running joke from the 90s with Chris Farley when he used to do those mock interviews. He had Paul McCartney on. So, when you were the Beatles, that was great, huh?
Wow.
That's where all
So, Kenny, Justin Herbert's running the ball. That's great, huh?
Like that.
It finally happened, didn't it?
No, there's two sentences. No, you can't have a period.
Oh,
it has to
true.
Be one
that is two different questions.
Kenny, Justin Herbert running, huh?
And a follow-up. About time, right?
Uniform sunset, huh? What do you think?
So back to what Gary said. The uniforms were nightmare green. That is technically green. I've hated that color since they announced what the uniforms are going to look like at one of the big open practices at Autzen. I thought it was like an olive color, a military green. It was very strange. I didn't like it. The helmets look spectacular. And the sunset at the Rose Bowl at the end of the third, start of the fourth quarter is no matter the weather, no matter what day or, you know, well, I guess
guess it's always January 1st, January 2nd. No matter what it is, the sunset at the Rose Bowl is the best sunset of the year. And Oregon, with the chrome that they were wearing, with the purple of the sky, and just the way that the chrome worked, it was fantastic. It looked beautiful.
Oh, once the game was over and I started seeing the shots, because, you know, it's funny because if you're on social media, in particular Facebook, when you wake up the next day, because now is exactly 8 years ago, Justin and I did our post game from the roof of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Overlooking the San Gabriel Mountains, and it is absolutely majestic.
Oh, yeah.
And I have no appreciation for it until after the game.
Slightly, you could be, you know, instead of 112% locked in, be 110% locked in and just appreciate, wow, the sunset looks. The ESPN, they're cameramen too.
I owe people.
They got
I have sponsors. We have segments. I got Ken Woody. I got people out there looking for information. I can't be, by the way, you know what I can't be doing? Stopping and smelling the roses.
Boo.
Boo. I'll tell you what. When Justin and I got to the top of the Rose Bowl and we, you know, we bring the equipment up and, you know, set, and all of a sudden we just stopped and looked and was like, yeah, so this is pretty cool. Because it really is freaking gorgeous. And sun, well, first of all, they alter the times of a lot of the other games in rotation. The Rose Bowl is always played on the first or second, and it's always played in the same place. And the sun on January 1st or 2nd is always going to go to A, it's always going to go down the same time. And not, how, what percentage of the time is it sunny in SoCal?
It's very rare to have sunshine in California. Really, everybody in Pasadena should have been extra grateful as to what a lovely day it was. Because it is still the wintertime and weather is just always horrible.
Yeah, that had a majestic element to it yesterday. Well, of course, your team is in it. They won. Let's face it, when you're a sports fan, winning can elevate the way you feel. You know, your mentality, your mood, all of it. I mean, if they were losing that game 52-3, everybody would be like, yeah, take that sunset and cram it. I hope the sun lands on the stadium.
I mean, it would have been a TV-wise, it would have been one cool shot, but it would have been, no one would have noticed. Get the purple out of here. What's going on? Show me the formation. What's the defense look like? Oregon's got to score, man. What's happening? But Oregon's winning. They're kind of in it. It's a close game. You appreciate the beauty of the direction of the broadcast to have that camera and that spot zoom in on Penei Sewell's face with all the eye black that he's got on, looking just like a badass MF-er out there, and then the sunset just beautifully reflecting off the chrome helmet. Oh, you give Bill Walton that shot, and he would shot. He would be crying. He'd talk about it for 9 days, and I'd want to listen to it. I would listen to Bill
for
9 days, assuming we get food and, you know, breaks for sleeping, couple hour naps here and there. I'm sure he'd stop to listen to a Dead concert, whatever. I'd absolutely listen to that.
It's like if you were a hostage, they made you listen to Walton for 9 straight days about the same sunset. You would break. You'd give them a codes to NORAD.
After 4.5 days, okay. Pushing it, but I would love to just, you give Bill Walton the picture and just be like, go.
Oh, the sunset on the Conference of Champions, the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all,
to start a new decade for the Conference of Champions.
All right,
Bill Walton on the call for Ducks Buffs tonight as well.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I tweeted out from the score.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing that. I do pay attention.
2020 is starting on the right or the wrong foot for many of
depending
you
on your
year.
Angle.
Yeah, depending on how you like Walton.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Let's break, come back, wrap up the 4 o'clock hour. Oh, we're going to do some talking trash next. 95.3 The Score.
I smell rose.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guaranty RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top 5 RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guaranty.com.
Herbert says, let's get it. Snap, turn, catch.
attempted. Going to go upside. Going outside. Got the speed. Got the touchdown. Herbert kept it and scores. Herbert with a stiff arm on Rashad Wild Goose. Got him around the edge.
Did he send him on a wild goose chase? Two stiff arms. Two stiff arms against Wild Goose Chase and Pearson's. And just for the record, we've seen a lot of defensive backs just grow in stature. I mean, you know, once upon a thing, guys like Rashad Bowman, terrific defensive back. But he was, what, 5'9", 5'10", 175, 180. A lot of speed and technique required. But as the nature of the receivers became more physical, obviously, you know, you think of the size and the strength and the aggressive nature of the Legion of Boom and guys like that. The two guys that I just mentioned that Justin swatted aside like gnats, they're 197 pounds. And they had angles. It's like, you know. All right, welcome back. Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. About to wrap up 4 o'clock hour. At both ends of the chatty spectrum, are you Jordan walking the walk and talking the talk, or are you Patrick Ewing guaranteeing a Game 7 win in the 94 Finals, then getting your ass handed to you by Hakeem the Dream? It's a little segment we call A Talkin' to Trash.
It's time for Talkin' Trash.
I can't really hear what Jordan says because I got my 2 Stanley Cup rings plugging my ear.
I'm not listening to you. You're crazy.
Steve and the guys bring people to the table and decide their fate.
Say what?
Who would bet on Ernie Terrell beating me? I told you I was floating like a butterfly and stinging like a bee.
You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here?
He's afraid to lose. I think what he should do is we should run this race over again so I can kick his ass one more time.
Oh, even Stink would say that stinks.
Son, I gotta do better than this.
All right, the best of the best trash talk that we've come up with, I guess, in, what, 3 weeks since we've done one of these? It's been a while, for sure. So we take the trash talk, the good, the bad, the ugly of it, and then we sort it out. We've got a varying different sorts of ways. We've got the incinerator, which is the best of the best. We can also take it to the dump or recycle it if it's not doing so well. Steve, would you like to lead off?
Certainly.
Who you got?
LA Times reporter Eric Sondheimer. So get this. First, the guy's primary beat is high school sports in SoCal. He's been doing it since 1976, so maybe he's just a curmudgeon. His handle on the platform is LAT Sondheimer. So 7:30 this morning, he tweets out, "The Oregon hype is just that hype. USC and UCLA will be fine. A degree matters. Living in LA matters. Playing in LA matters. I'm not buying the hype." Well, wait a minute. Did the Ducks get awarded the North? Did the Pac-12 title get handed to them, the Rose Bowl, because they got hype? From where? Utah was a 6-point favorite in the conference championship game. Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. Now, you want to chirp for USC? Okay. UCLA? The program hasn't won the league in 21 years. You want to know when the last time UCLA won the Rose Bowl? January of 1986.
Oof.
They've fallen so far behind the Ducks the past 2 decades, they're barely visible. So trash talking with lies and ignorance is...
He missed the point. Like, you're going to talk about how bad everything has gone for USC and especially UCLA, like, since the 2000s, especially since 2010. Like, each of them have had a good season. A good season. For UCLA, it was like making the Pac-12 championship game a couple of times.
Because USC was ineligible.
Right, exactly. Like, and USC, you know, made it to a Rose Bowl. That's all they've had. And you think SoCal is still the place to be? No, thank you, sir. All right, mine, I brought this up a while back, but Bruce Arians, who ruthlessly roasted lamest Jameis Winston for no reason, he was asked about the future of the position with Jameis' success this year, you know, leading the league in passing and also the 30 for 30 club, which is one you don't want to be in. But he's asked if Tampa could still win with another quarterback who might not be as good as the 5,000-yard passer. Arians said, quote, "With another QB? Oh, yeah. If we can win with this one, we can definitely win with another one, too. Throwing his quarterback under the bus accidentally, I think. How do we sort out this trap? Because it's like, yeah, okay, we can definitely win with somebody else. But he's like praising Jameis, and he's knocking him down a step. It's one step forward, two steps back, much like Jameis's career in the NFL.
Well, he is one step forward, two steps back Jones. I actually think you could incinerate when it's accidentally throwing your own guy off under the bus.
Absolutely.
That sound is just so telling. All right, next up, Columbus Blue Jacket coach John Tortorella. If you've been listening to All Sports Radio, you've heard the rant. And if you haven't, here's the sanitized version.
The whistle is blown at 19.2 on the clock. For some reason, the clock has run down a second and a tenth to 18.1. For whatever reason, I have no idea. So instead of resetting the clock, we have them tell our captain we're not going to do it. Toronto doesn't step in. Refs don't do their freaking job. And now we lose the game and we lose our goalie. So the chain of events, if it was done right, we don't lose our goalie, we win the hockey game. So all this technology, right? The technology and getting things right. The stubbornness tonight by the officials and by the league and Toronto, however it's supposed to work, screws us.
So I know folks are saying, what's the big deal? 1 second not added to the clock. Well, it was a tie game, and his team scored a goal at the final horn at the end of overtime. But they review it, and they're like, the puck did not go in. So if they had allowed the second, they win. Instead, if you know hockey, you go to overtime. Then if it's still tied, you go to the shootout. They lose in the shootout, and his goalie, Jonas Corposano, is injured.
It's a fake person.
So Torts gets fined, but this rant is spot-on accurate. The refs are idiots. So I know Tort's kind of a master ranter, but what do we make of this one?
Context aside, that is one of the best sports rants probably of 2019 when it happened. That was phenomenal. You don't even need the context for it.
It just helps.
Just the dead side, and he walked it off. I'm not taking any more questions, and he's saying that as he's walking away. It was spectacular.
It's awesome.
Very quickly, Tottenham Hotspur manager Jose Mourinho throwing shade at another coach. Spurs were playing Southampton this weekend. They came with a Mourinho-esque 1-0 win, and Mo made it all about himself as he got a yellow card as the manager for causing a scene with the fourth official and the Southampton coach because a sub was taking too long. After the game, here comes the trash talk. Jose saying, I think the yellow card is fair because I was rude, but I was rude to an idiot. So how are we sorting out Jose calling someone who is technically a colleague of his rude?
Well, I like the fact that he was willing to admit, of course I'm being rude, but being rude to an idiot, right. So is that the friend of my friend is my enemy and my enemy is my friend?
No, look, we have to agree. I had to do this because I was dealing with an idiot.
You want
to
know something?
I had to be rude to deal with this
Have
guy.
We had a 4-for-4?
We have not.
It's time. Start out 2020 on a high note. Incinerate them all.
Burn!
Booyah! And that's a wrap. We'll be back with a somewhat abbreviated 5 o'clock hour, because at the bottom of the hour, we're going to bring you the pregame for Duck Men's Basketball. Next, 95.3 The Score.
I'm not going to be here.